So good afternoon, my friends. I'm happy to be sitting here alone in my big room. Maybe some of you alone in your room, but all together in this Zoom room, all together on this retreat. Thank you. The topic for this talk is the clear comprehension of purpose. It's one of the four forms of clear comprehension that are discussed in the commentaries of the suttas. So clear comprehension of suitability, clear comprehension of purpose, clear comprehension of domain of practice, and clear comprehension of non-delusion. And so I'll talk some about clear comprehension and focus mostly on the study of purpose. And I'm very happy with this English word purpose as a jumping off place for a discussion today. But I want to say that the Pali word has other meanings as well. It could also mean with a sense of the goal. The heart of the word is atta. So it can mean the goal of practice. It can also mean what's beneficial or what's, welfare. So that which is connected to our welfare, that which is connected to the goal, and that which is the purpose that we have. The purpose means where we're going, you know, connected to the goal. And this idea of purpose is quite important, I think, that purpose is sometimes the ballast for our life, the fuel for our life, what gives life meaning, what gives it direction. And for many people, the purpose of their life, what their purpose is more at the heart of who they actually are than almost anything else. Experiences come and go, relationships come and go, jobs come and go, activities come and go. But sometimes there's an underlying purpose of what our life is about, what it's for, that carries us through. It kind of creates a stability, like this is what it's really about. And some people don't have that. They never discover it. Some people are too busy being distracted. If a Martian anthropologist came to see some people in this country to see what the purpose of their life is, probably they come to the conclusion is to see as many websites as possible and click around or to watch a lot of TV programs. And that's really, you know, what their life is, seems to be all about. They get everything ready during the day so they can get home. They can do the important thing of watching a screen. It's hard to live a human life. Human lives are challenging. Survival is challenging in many ways. Finding a way through this world, the complexity of our interpersonal relationships, our relationship to other people, our family, ourselves, makes things very difficult and stressful for many people. Work and the demands of work, and some people don't have work which has much meaning or a real sense of purpose, except to bring money home to pay rent and food and that's pretty special to be able to support someone else. But you know, it's sometimes kind of deadening a little bit, the job they do, and it doesn't really kind of bring them life. But to really have a deep sense of purpose, and to have that be the foundation from which we live our life. Sometimes people are lucky and they have it. Many people, it takes some deep reflection, some deep contemplation, deep sensing, feeling, you know, there's just being present for this world in a very full way. I loved what Andrea said this morning about making a request of your subconscious, that you can make requests for it to relax, or request for it to receive things fully or to allow things. And it goes in the other direction as well, in that this subconscious also has a request of us. What is the request of your heart? What's the deepest request that comes out of who you are? that's not necessarily the conscious mind or the logical mind. What is it that you, what is the request? In some religious traditions, they talk about a calling. And I think that idea is that you're called from God to do a certain thing. I think in the Dharma, it's more of a sense of what's the request that it bubbles up out of you? What, you know, what is it, what in the depth of your hearts? And part of the value of going on retreat or meditating is sometimes to get quiet enough and composed, calm enough, so we can listen to what is a deeper request, what's a deeper aspiration and wish and purpose that this heart, this being, and from the depths out, really wants to live their life for. And then, you know, I don't know if we could make, once you're talking about the subconscious or this depth in us, I don't know if it's any that's separate from the world around us. There's a kind of, a harmony, integration, or a wholeness that comes from who we are deep inside, and the universe is inside, the universe is outside. Some people ask the question of themselves, what is the request of the world? What am I being requested to do at this point, this juncture in human history, this juncture of my situation I find myself in? And, you know, and it's quite inspiring to see people who never would have imagined they were going to do something, but some major event happened and something happened, and that was the request of the situation, and their life then became dedicated to something because that's what came their way. And so how do we listen to this deep request? How do we listen to what's really here within us that wants to come forth? When I was a new practitioner, first few years, when I first started meditating, I just did it haltingly. Then at some point, I settled down to meditate regularly every day, twice a day. And once I really started doing it, I was surprised that I didn't know why I was doing it, but I had to do it. I knew that I had to do it. There was no question about doing it, but I didn't know why. And so I didn't really have a clear sense of purpose, except that it was something inside of me was clearly going yes, or saying, this is what has to happen. So I think that sometimes it's not always so clear to people why they're doing something, why they go on retreat, why they meditate. Sometimes it says there on the retreat questionnaire, why are you here? And I suspect I haven't counted, but the most common, probably among the most, if not the most common response people give is deepen my practice. And that seems, you know, I'm happy with that answer. I probably said that, given that answer myself. But, you know, I've gotten this so many times, like, I wonder what that means. what do they mean by deep? What is practice for them? And what does practice mean? And what's the purpose they have for practice? So I never ask anyone, but I could say it publicly, semi-publicly here, you know, what is the purpose? What's the goal? Why? What's the value of deepening practice? Why deepen practice? It's just that is practice the newest version of God that you don't question, and you're just kind of like, it's the greatest good, and so you just do it because it's you know, must be right. All my friends are doing it, so it must be the good thing. Or do we have a clear sense inside of what that purpose is for our practice? And I've been a teacher for a long time, and I would say that everyone who comes to practice comes for a different reason. That there's many purposes that exist. And as a teacher, I try to be somewhat careful, especially when I'm talking to people one-on-one, to be responsive to the intention or the purpose that the practitioner has that I'm talking to, and then seeing how we can use the mindfulness and the practice to support their purpose, rather than thinking that there's only one purpose and I know what that is and I can tell you what it is. And hopefully I've been respectful of you. Some of you have been to a lot of my practice discussions with me, and you know, you'll tell me later how well I succeeded maybe. But my wish is to meet people's intention and purpose and try to support it. because I have a very deep trust in the process, both of looking for and feeling our way into our sense, our intentionality, or our sense of deep purpose, what our life is going to be about, why we live, what is most important for us. I have a lot of respect for the value of that. And also the tremendous respect in that process of finding it, that discovering what our intentions are, our purpose are, and knowing it and even articulating what we can. And then that allows it to go deeper and deeper, or evolve and to change. And I spent a year of my life more, but one year very intentionally asking myself each day, what is my deepest intention? What is my deepest sense of purpose? And that was a year well spent, because it changed and morphed and was the mystery, and I didn't know, and then I knew, and then I didn't know, and it just kind of evolved and deepened, and I learned so much about myself in that process, and so much about kind of something deeper and deeper that could well up inside. And at some point, this idea of a request became very important, that one of the purposes of my life is to respond to the suffering of the world in whatever way that I can to help alleviate suffering. And I would say that that's probably been, in my adult life, the central organizing purpose principle that I've had. And that's what brings me to teach a retreat. It brings me to be a teacher and study and do all the things I do because of this overarching or underarching, this fundamental kind of purpose that I've really organized my life around. But it's a purpose that I didn't exactly decide, choose, but rather it's a purpose which just seemed to be what the system of this psychophysical world system that I am or live in, that what was welling up, or what was. Almost as if having a sense of purpose like this is indistinguishable from anything that I can call Gil, me, myself, who I am. It's not like I put on a coat to do this. It just became, it's kind of like who I am, is kind of the feeling. So this idea of purpose. And then along that line, I think one of the really important areas of purpose for me that, as I said, trying to explain here, the sense of this deep place of purpose inside that had been an organizing principle. When I was doing Zen practice, and in Zen practice, they chant regularly something called the Bodhisattva vows, four vows people take. And at some point, those vows seem to be the closest thing or a way of giving expression to what I was feeling inside. This sense of that who I was responding to the suffering of the world, that was expressed through those vows. So I didn't really take on the vows, but rather I found that they gave expression to what was well enough to what I was feeling. And those vows are some people are very happy that they're impossible vows. The idea that they're impossible to fulfill just means that you're always open. It's always relevant. It's always kind of keeps opening and opening to life and to experience and to what's next, rather than closing something and, you know, being finished. And this kind of boundless quality of this request to be of service. So the Bodhisattva vows go something like this. Different Buddhist groups chant them differently, say them differently. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them all. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them all. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. And then I went, after my years of Zen practice, I went and started in Vipassana practice. And I went to do the 3-month retreat once at IMS. And it was before the I was there, and some of you have been there. I was in the hallway in front entrance, and I remember it very well. And somehow Joseph Goldstein was there, and we knew each other a little bit from before. We practiced in Asia together. And so we were saying hello, and then he asked me, why are you here? Why are you here to practice? What are you here for? And I was kind of taken by surprise by that question. No one ever had asked me that specifically. Why are you here to practice? Why are you practicing on retreat like this? And I said to him, the first thing that came up was, I'm here to suffer less or to end my suffering. And that kind of ended the conversation. And I left, and I felt, I didn't know much about Buddhism and stuff. And I left, and I thought, wow, that was a pretty weak answer. That was a pretty weak answer. And, I was a Zen priest by then, so Zen monk. So, wow, that's all I could say. And many years later, I came to appreciate that actually was a profound answer. That was a very deep answer because of how central suffering is in human lives and how profound and deep suffering and the clinging that produces suffering abides in the heart, how much it's a limitation for this boundless quality of freedom that's possibility. And that to really plumb to the depth of one's own suffering, there are people in the world who need to do that. If no one does that, is there any hope? If no one does that, then certainly we can help people in very important ways, but we don't really help people in the depths of who they are. We can provide food to people who are hungry, and they can still be filled with inner conflict and turmoil. We could provide people with housing. We could provide people with education, provide people with, nice homes and TVs and computers and all kinds of wonderful things. And also provide people with nice livelihood and all good things. But all those things might never touch the depth of what their suffering is about, what their anguish is about, what their conflicts are about, what their what's really going on deep, deep inside. And I believe it's very important there are some people in this world who had some visceral experience of this possibility of the heart, the mind, really putting down or shedding fully or really experiencing the profundity of the peace that our hearts are about. So that when we're talking about compassion and alleviating suffering, we have a reference point about how complete that's possible to do. So that we're not only rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic to make it more comfortable as the Titanic goes down, that we're really discovering and touching into the depths of where clinging and holding and craving and despair and grief and distress and pain exists in us to, in the relationship to some of the deepest existential issues of our life, sickness, old age, and death. And to really find out for ourselves, if we plumb the depths, really go deep in practice, to discover this possibility of a radical absence of suffering. So that's kind of like the Dharma context, and so I have deep faith that if we keep looking and practice mindfulness and really work on our intentionality, our purpose, and with the mindfulness, we'll see that it will go through layers and layers of our psyche, layers and layers of discovering who we are, layers and layers of discovering what's living inside of us. And it is coming to a place where perhaps, at least in my language, you'll hear the request of your heart. You'll hear the request of the world, for not because it's different than who you are, but that request is who you are and your response to it. And that's what the Buddha did, I believe. The Buddha, supposedly had this phenomenal motivation to come to terms with the existential issues of greed, hate, and delusion, birth and death, that we all have live in the middle. And he discovered a level of peace, of freedom, of happiness that is the backbone for this retreat. This retreat is a Buddhist retreat, and it's built on the foundation of what Buddhism and the Buddha and his awakening was all about, and people for generations now are passing on from one person to the next. So this idea of purpose, this idea of knowing your purpose, asking yourself, what's the purpose of this, is a really wise thing to do. To have a clear comprehension of purpose clarifies so much about what we're about and where we're going. And you know, it can be as simple as conversations you have with friends, and you're about to say something, and you ask yourself, for what purpose are you going to say this? And when you realize what the purpose is, you may or may not choose to say it. If you are getting a new job, you can ask yourself, for what purpose is this? If that, you know, is this the purpose you want to base your life on? The purpose of, you know, that you have for this job or something? Or is there another purpose? I kind of like the idea of people following their heart's deepest intention, even at the cost of being a starving artist or starving Dharmaist, Dharma bum or something, or whatever it is that really speaks and nourishes the heart, really makes your heart sing, or really, this is what I want to do, and this is what I'm about. And one of the great things, like these inexhaustible bodhisattva vows, these impossible bodhisattva vows, one of the purposes is to never find the purpose, but to always be looking, always be questioning, always opening and listening more and more deeply. And that process of trusting and not having an answer can be so profound itself. You don't think that you're left behind because you don't have an answer. You might actually be ahead because if the question keeps opening you and opening you and opening you. So clear comprehension is a partner to sati, to mindfulness or to awareness. And to be very simplistic about it, sati in and of itself is maybe not so smart. It's like the dumb partner to clear comprehension. Clear comprehension is where the wisdom is, where the understanding is. Where we really recognize what's happening and understand something about it. And the value of really developing a strong, aware presence, so we really can be here and present, is so the partner of clear comprehension can operate. And so it can support us and help us see more clearly, recognize more clearly what's here, and appreciate what the purpose is, the purpose of any particular activity. Oh, this is the purpose for doing this, and or the purpose that underlies our very existence and our life that we want to have. So if I'm driving down the street and I have enough awareness to see that up ahead is a traffic light where the light is red, that's good awareness. Clear comprehension tells me I should stop for that light, the red light. That light means it's a convention for stopping and waiting until it turns green. The awareness just puts me in the territory so I notice it, so I don't run the red light. Clear comprehension is a relatively complicated social construct that we learn and operates and in place, and hopefully we all cooperate with it. That might change. I had a friend, I was living with a friend two friends, a couple, and she was pregnant, very due. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, I heard this dash down the steps and slamming of the door and screechings of the tire as they were going to the hospital. She was giving birth. And almost right then and there. So see the red light, 3 o'clock in the morning, see the red light up ahead. Clear comprehension of who's in the back seat and the baby's coming out. No cars anywhere in sight. Red light doesn't mean stop. Red light means keep going, get to the hospital. Clear comprehension kind of has the ability to look at the situation, understand what the purpose should be, what's valuable, what's important. And this is true at many different scales or many different levels. And our lives can move back and forth between different levels of reality or of experience or activity. And we know that, I think, people who go on retreat, because in retreat life, especially in meditation, the kind of scale or the level in which we're engaged in reality gets simpler and simpler and simpler. It's sometimes it's very important to be aware and thoughtful and of the world at the global scale. And clear comprehension has to do with understanding what's happening on the globe. Sometimes it's clear comprehension, understanding what's happening in this country, or in your town, or with the weather, or with the traffic, or who's in the car with you, or who's having dinner with you, or what you have in the what you're going to make for dinner, and for what purpose. And then wake up in the morning, and clear comprehension is, oh yeah, I have this meditation thing I do in the morning. Let me get myself ready. How do I get myself ready the best, so that I really can be present for meditation? Maybe a shower, maybe coffee, maybe no coffee, maybe no shower, whatever it might be, a clear comprehension of what supports us to do the meditation. And then we sit down to meditate, clear comprehension of what kind of posture supports us. And maybe different days, different posture supports us, depending on what's going on in the body. And so we have to have some kind of understanding. And it helps, that understanding is guided a little bit by the purpose. So if you wake up and you say, I'm going to meditate in a few minutes, but I'm really supported by having some breakfast first. And then I can really settle down. And so you make a feast of a breakfast, you know, 6 scones, you know, omelet of 6 eggs, 6 glasses of orange juice, 6 cups of coffee, 6, I don't know what else, lots of sixes. And then you sit down to meditate. I've overeaten and tried to meditate. And I would probably, you know, if you keep it as a secret, I would say, I mean, don't let Andrea hear this, because, you know, there's the different teachers will say you can never fail in meditation. But I would say that the meditation didn't work, especially when I got up and left, because I just felt so bloated and so miserable, and my breathing wasn't quite present. It's just like just too much. So, you know, that's not clear comprehension of how to eat breakfast in order to meditate well and be supported. So this. Then we sit down to meditate, and we have the right breakfast, we have the right posture. And then how does clear comprehension operate now? It might operate out of the wisdom of years of practice that it's best not to have high expectations. It's best not to be striving too much or trying to force the issue. And I've learned, I mean, everyone's going to find something different for themselves. I find generally when I sit down to meditate, the first 5 minutes or so, I almost like don't meditate. I kind of let my mind kind of drift and wonder and think. And then after about 5 minutes, things begin to kind of coalescing. And then I can, in a nice way, let go of my thoughts, my concern, my interest in thoughts, But this kind of settling and allowing things to be and not be in conflict with them and not be for or against them, not feel like it has to be something or in a hurry to attain something, something begins to settle and let go and allowing just kind of a being to be there, that sometimes I need to shed all the doing and the wanting and the expectations that or the busyness of the mind. It's better just to leave it alone, I've learned. You know, and after 5 minutes or after some minutes, then things start to coalesce and settle enough that then, okay, now's the time to really be aware. It's kind of like, okay, now I turn towards awareness. And then how I'm aware depends a lot on what's happening for me. And sometimes my mind is really busy. And sometimes that the best thing I've discovered then is to turn towards that busyness of the mind, just allow that to be and feel it and sense it and allow that to arise in awareness. Sometimes I find that what's best for me is to count the breathing, just ignore the fact that my mind is so busy and direct my attention to the breath and actually count it for a while until something settles even more. And so why I choose one over the other on different days probably has to do with a lot of the ecology of the situation at any one time. But I'm guided by a comprehension of the overarching purpose. The overarching purpose is to come to a place where I'm not in conflict with anything, where I'm present and clear enough to begin unraveling the complexity of suffering and being caught by things, and come to a place where I can really start appreciating more deeply the wellsprings of peace that exists within, or ease or freedom that are there. And so exactly what brings me to that varies from day to day, and what supports that varies from day to day. And sometimes it feels like I sit down and it's what's available is just to let kind of open up and just relax and just let reality, let everything just show itself into the field of awareness. There's no doer, no doing. It just things just arise. And other times, it seems like if I do that, that's just a recipe for daydreaming. And I need a little bit more of an anchor and stability. And so then I might still to this day, occasionally I'll count my breath that I did in my early years. Or some of you have heard that a very common practice I have when my mind is busy is I say the word here. And I love this word here, H-E-R-E. And I'll just say it. And once it's been said, it's kind of like a door opens up in my mind. For a moment, I open up like Andrea's scooter, pushing it once, the momentum is there. I say here, and there's this open space. And I'm curious, what is here? Well, here's a busy mind, here's an active mind. And then the active mind takes over, and then I say, here again, here. Here's physical energy, here's tension, here. Just kind of discovery. And so it's very open-ended, but it's not so open-ended it allows my mind to take over. I just can hear, and then see what's here. And if I do that for some minutes, then things quiet enough, the momentum of agitation, momentum of preoccupation quiets enough that then I don't have to do that anymore. Sometimes when I feel like I'm really present in a very strong, good way, I find that, you know, that what helps me with this purpose of staying in the flow of the practice and allow it to deepen into deeper places of freedom, deeper places where I look at the suffering that I have, is I find when I'm kind of like a, it isn't like a scooter I'm on, I feel like I've caught the wave, like I'm surfing. Now I'm caught the wave of the present moment, I'm surfing on it. And then to stay on that surfboard, I'll use the word yes. I just say yes to everything, yes, yes. And that yes kind of keeps things open, keeps things kind of allowing and relaxed and receptive to the next wave or to stay on that wave. But it isn't just to have a good experience. It isn't just to be stress-free or be calm or spacious or open. The purpose of my practice is not to have an experience. And to be looking for an experience to be the thing, a certain level of peace, certain degree of calm or of compassion or love or something. I think that my experience is that kind of ends up being kind of a dead end in and of itself when the focus is an experience. But rather, the purpose is to really discover how not to be in conflict with anything, to really see and uproot and discover the subtlest ways in which the mind is for and against things, the subtlest ways in which there's a little bit of self, or a lot of self, little bit of, you know, me, myself, and my operating in this, little bit of even a sense of me versus you, self and other, that's operating in a way that creates limitation, or a subtle way in which, even that subtle way in which there's some idea that there's an object to awareness. There's something there, and I'm here being aware. To just keep looking for that freedom, notice where is this, where is the stress, where is the tension, where is the dukkha, even in the most sublime states that are possible. And so as practice deepens, the clear comprehension of purpose, of what we're about, can still be operating. But it operates also on itself, meaning that if we have a purpose and we're bringing that purpose up in our mind too often and, you know, kind of trying to push it and to go for it, that just might agitate us more, take us into suffering rather than freedom from suffering. So then there's the art of what, you know, this kind of dropping something into the subconscious and kind of knowing, trusting, that if an intention, a sense of purpose is really heartfelt, you don't have to keep thinking about it. It becomes like second nature. It's there to support us. So, you know, your intention, your purpose might be to go on retreat and meditate. When you finally come to the retreat, you should stop thinking about going to the retreat. That will just agitate you. Or what I've done, maybe some of you have done, you know, some days into the retreat, thinking about how great it would be to go to the next retreat. And how great, I'll get really quiet and still, the mind will get, you know, so wonderfully, you know, my thinking will stop. And so I think I should think about now about how do I set up for it? Do I have enough money for that retreat? And how do I arrange to get time off from work? And what kind of plane ticket am I going to get? And I should, maybe if I look now during this retreat, I get a cheap ticket. And I say, wait a minute, what do you mean this retreat? I'm just missing my retreat by thinking about the next retreat. So the idea is to recognize that even a wholesome good purpose, you know, when you you let go of even that, as the momentum and the direction goes further and further. And so in meditation, there is clear comprehension, what Andrea pointed to so well this morning about relaxation and receptivity and allowing, to decide to do those things, to notice that we're not relaxed and let's relax. That's an exercise in clear comprehension. This and a clear comprehension of purpose. The purpose in the short term is to relax, comprehend that that's useful, and then to allow that to occur, to do that. To have a sense that being receptive, because I'm not being receptive, and a clear comprehension that this is not receptivity, but something else is, and maybe being receptive is a good thing, and let me be receptive now. That's clear comprehension operating. And same thing with allowing. So we use our clear comprehend, we use our intelligence, but how to use our intelligence, our capacity for reflection and thinking and comprehension, so things get simpler and simpler. And so to understand that part of the purpose in meditation, there's many purposes, but one of the purposes is the quieting of the mind, quieting of the discursive thinking of the mind. So we're not caught up in thinking, and quieting, if we're not just thinking about other things, even quieting and still quieting, softening, slowing down how we're thinking about our meditation practice even. So there's more stillness in the mind, but that's the direction we're going. So if there's clear comprehension, that it would be useful to relax. You don't want to rush the relaxation, get it over it as quickly as you can. That's probably more agitating than relaxing. But oh, it's time to relax. Okay, I'll get around to it in a few seconds. Just take your time and open to it. And you know, even the very ways in which you open to relaxation, do it leisurely. Take your time. The very way in which you might say to yourself, well, this idea of allowing is a good one, Andrea talked about. But yeah, I wonder how I would do that. And then you pause. No, don't allow for no answer. Or you say, I think I'll do it next. And then pause and just let there be silence and quiet so that there's space and things get quieter and stiller. And then do the allowing. This idea that we're moving our mind, we're nudging, supporting the mind, the body, to become vibrantly stiller, quieter, settled, more open, so that not for the purpose of just being quiet, but it's because so we can listen, see, feel much more subtly what's really going on here. It gives us access to new forms of wisdom, new understandings. It gives us access to really see the difference between when we're suffering and when we're not, which is clear comprehension. We start seeing very clearly what is helpful and not helpful, what is wholesome and not wholesome. Not because we have to think about it, because it's just so clear in the experience of it. Oh, this is a good direction. This is good. This is freeing. This is onward leading towards deeper dharma. This is not so useful. This is onward leading to more agitation, more back to the same old loops of the mind that's been spinning for so long. So we're using clear comprehension, and clear comprehension belongs to our intelligence. And so we're learning to use our intelligence for the purpose of meditation. And many people associate intelligence with thinking a lot and thinking more. But how do we use our intelligence to be wise and clever and about the process of meditation, the purpose we're here for? For the settling, the peacemaking, the deepening of what we're doing here. And it's possible to be reflective a little bit, it's possible to consider it a little bit, to find your way. And so I wanted to read to you from one of the great Abhidharma texts called the Vibhanga. It gives a lot of synonyms. So it gives synonyms for clear comprehension. So as you hear this, you might be inspired by all these words. Maybe if you relax and just give these words the benefit of the doubt that these are great things, maybe you'll be inspired. Maybe you'll cry in discouragement hearing these words. Like, what? Give me a break. Maybe you'll be amused. Maybe you'll feel sorry for the translator who had to figure out these English words to translate some obscure Pali words. But listen to these words. The purpose for why I'm going to read it to you is to try to give some flavor that in using your capacity for clear comprehension, for intelligence, considering the purpose of what you're doing, both the fundamental purpose of practice of your life, the purpose of what you're doing any given time. What's the purpose of eating? What's the purpose of taking a nap? What's the purpose of doing walking meditation? What's the purpose of, you know, whatever? And to ask that question is not meant only to have an answer, but it's also meant to expand the range of purposes you might have. There, it doesn't have to be just one answer to the question of purpose. If it's time to wash the dishes in the kitchen, what's the purpose for washing the dishes? I might in my smart aleck time say to clean the dishes. What else? There's nothing else. But there's other purposes of cleaning the dishes. One purpose of doing the dishes is to make this dishwashing part of my retreat and to really do it mindfully and present and really use this. The purpose is, cleaning the dishes is almost incidental to the purpose of really developing clear awareness, clear concentration, really be present in a full and alive way in a still, quiet mind. Just with the dishes. Or the purpose of doing the dishes is to make the kitchen nice for my housemates so they don't have to come in and see the mess and they don't have to work. Or the purpose of doing the dishes is to listen deeply to what the request is of the dishes. In Zen, sometimes they have that kind of language. What's the request of the dishes? So if you're going to put the dirty dish, you clean it and you dry it and you're going to put it away. The request of the dish is, given the whole situation, known and unknown, the intuition of it, what does it feel like to be the right place and the right way to put that dish away? As opposed to kind of just like unconsciously, like putting it in the shelf as if it's like you're already involved in other things, like, who cares about that? It's just put it up there and out of sight, out of mind. It's like how everything we do, every individual thing we do is important. How we put the dry, clean plate on the shelf is as important as being with your breathing as you meditate or having compassion for your suffering when you suffer. So what's the request of the dish is to really be there for the experience. So that you're really putting the dish on the shelf in a way that supports so many different things, including the deepening of your own meditation practice. So all those things can be true. If you ask, what's the purpose of washing the dishes? You can do that. Don't settle on the first one, but let it be opening and inspiring and fill you out. So it's in this use of our intelligence, clear comprehension of purpose, clear comprehension. Here's the list of synonyms for the sampajana, for clear comprehension. What is clear comprehension? That which is wisdom, understanding, investigation, research, truth investigation, discernment, discrimination, differentiation, erudition, proficiency, subtlety, analysis, consideration, breadth. I like that, breadth. Sagacity, guidance, insight, awareness, wisdom, the faculty of wisdom, the power of wisdom, the sword of wisdom, the tower of wisdom, the light of wisdom, the luster of wisdom, the splendor of wisdom, the jewel of wisdom, the absence of dullness, truth investigation, and right view. This is called clear comprehension. So that's like a pretty grand list that your intelligence can use. So I have two more things to say and then we'll end. First, I want to say that there are people who I've met who are worried that they're not intelligent enough. In the Dharma, you only have to be as intelligent as the intelligence you used to get attached. There's a completely perfect match. You're a perfect match for the job. For the job that has to be done, because in some way or other, it was your native intelligence that you had that got you stuck to begin with. So you got what it takes. Use it. The second thing I wanted to say, one of the one of the things I like about this term sampajana is sometimes I like to think of it as clear recognition. And I've talked about these different levels or scales that we go through, and as when we're really settled and quiet enough and peaceful enough and things are really simple in meditation, then the way that clear comprehension works at some point in the most obvious way, moment by moment, it's the simple recognition of the particularity of what's happening right now. Not a generalized sense, but really the particularity of, oh, this is a sound. This is an in-breath. This is pressure. This is release of pressure. This is movement. We don't have to have those words, we could, but it's that kind of the clear recognition. And the word clear at this level of just simple recognition of what's there is the recognition, is when the recognition, when the awareness is so clear that the recognition is not entangled with what it knows. So if I have this clock here, and if I think this is the best clock going anywhere and really attached to it, this is important, and it's like having a good clock in front of the meditation hall is really ups the status of a Dharma teacher, and this is like really important for me to have this clock. I'm thinking about the clock all the time and make sure everyone sees I have this great clock, and I hope I realize how important my status is, and because I have this clock. I'm completely preoccupied with the clock and I'm lost in the world of the clock and what it means for me. If instead I start recognizing, oh, it's a clock. Oh, it's that special clock. Nope, just recognize it's a clock. I hope they see it. No, just see. Just recognize clock, it's a clock. And I keep saying, oh, this is a clock. This is a clock, the clock. Until some point, I'm not entangled with it. There's a clear feeling of freedom from it, a freedom in the knowing, in the awareness. The awareness is not entangled with. It's almost as if awareness has stepped back and kind of looks at it from a distance almost, or is wider than, or is like the awareness is like the palm being open, and rather than grasping something or pushing something away, the palm is flat and open and it can hold things in the middle of it. So to clearly recognize this is what's happening. They clearly recognize anger, sadness, fear. And sometimes with these kinds of emotions, the clear recognition sometimes really helps with the mental note. And even three words start by this is sadness, this is fear. And then you feel that you're not quite separated from it, or you're still entangled with it. And you might even say it stronger, this is fear. Or just do it repeatedly, very gently, relaxedly, this is fear, until you find the magic of being pulled out of the mud, pulled out of the entanglement. And if you can't get pulled out of the mud, of the entanglement, then clear recognition recognizes the mud, recognizes, oh, this is entanglement. This is entanglement. And then at some point, you might ask to have clear comprehension, your intelligence come into play. Given what's happening now, what is useful? What is the purpose I'm sitting here for with my sadness, with my anger? Is the purpose to be proficient at being angry? Is the purpose to really specialize in sadness or really kind of reinforce it? Or is the purpose to respect the anger, the fear, respect the sadness in some deep way? That's a good purpose. And in respecting it, find ourselves independent of it, free of it. Not absent of it, not hasn't gone away, but we're no longer entangled. So one meaning of this word clear in the clear recognition is there's so much clarity in the seeing and the knowing that it's obvious that we are independent, that awareness is free, not contracted around or lost in what we're concerned with. So clear comprehension of purpose, clear comprehension. May you use it for the purpose of discovering your heart's capacity to live without any conflict whatsoever, without suffering, and perhaps your own deepest request. Thank you.